Salaam alaikum and welcome to Sukoon, a Muslim wellness podcast by Nasimco. My name is Farhana Kasamali and I will be your host through this journey we take together towards holistic wellness within an Islamic framework. Join us as we speak to community leaders, experts, and mental health and wellness professionals who will enrich us with their healing words, stories, and personal journeys on the path to wellness. So verily, with every difficulty, there is relief. Verily, with every difficulty, there is relief. Quran, Surah Al-Insyirah, verses 5 through 6. Join me every month as we begin these essential conversations to promote our community's well-being and healing, and to begin to unravel the ways in which we as a community can heal, individually, internally, and also collectively, in unity. Please note, this episode contains themes of depression, anxiety, and other potentially triggering discussions. If you or someone you know is in crisis or in need of support, please look to our show notes for resources. I'm really honored to introduce our guest for this month, Sister Marzia Hassan. Sister Marzia is a relationship counselor, parent coach, author, and speaker. She works with modern Muslims who yearn to find peace and happiness in their lives and are looking for fulfillment and connection in their relationships. Deeply influenced by spirituality, mindfulness, neuroscience, positive psychology, and cognitive behavioral therapy, she is trained as a social worker and has a private practice, Family Connections International, which is based in Toronto, Canada. She also serves Muslim clients virtually from across North America and beyond. Sister Marzia has her master's in social work from the University of Toronto. She has her Bachelor of Law from the University of Toronto, and she is certified in couples and family therapy studies, along with having a Bachelor of Arts in Economics and English Literature from Williams College. She is a registered social worker, just to name a few of her accolades. Welcome, Sister Marzia.
Assalamu alaikum, Farhana. It is lovely to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us. Could you start by telling us a little about yourself for those who don't know you, and then also how you got into this career?
Sure, absolutely. So I did not start out as a social worker. In fact, I did not even study psychology at university. I was always academically inclined. And after I finished my bachelor's, I went into the study of law. Started in the US, then we moved to Toronto. I went to law school here at the University of Toronto, had two children while I was in law school. Probably not one of my soundest decisions. And started in the practice of corporate law in a downtown large Bay Street law firm. Very glamorous and very soulless. So I worked very hard, but I just could not feel the satisfaction. By this time, I had two young kids and I wanted to stay at home with them. I couldn't focus, like I just needed to be home. So I took time off and meanwhile, followed my husband around on his career around the world. And while we were in England, started becoming interested in family relationships, because I was seeing the family, the Muslim family, already starting to struggle in many places. The divorce rates were climbing, parents were having challenges, and it's much,
and what
much
years for this? What years did you start noticing this?
So I would say end of the last century, like the 1990s. And then, so I started actually first just educating myself, attending conferences, and, trained as a family life educator more than anything else, began to lead workshops. And what I found was when I would lead a workshop, there were so many people who needed extra support. And so people would start coming just for guidance. And I was like, oh dear, I'm really not trained to do this. So if I am doing this, I better get trained. And so I went back to school, got my master's in social work, along with some other things. And here we are. So it kind of, I always say that this was never my intention, just as it was never my intention to be a speaker, writer, author. It's It's something that finds you. And I really do believe that, God was just shining a flashlight in my face. And I just kept on saying yes, basically.
That's an amazing story. It's very inspirational for those of us who have studied something and maybe aren't feeling fulfilled in their current career choice. What do you think are the biggest challenges facing Muslim families today? And I know that's a loaded question given the wide demographic, the age groups, the different, socioeconomic statuses of everyone.
Absolutely. And yes, there are many. And when I'm speaking about mostly the South Asian, East African diaspora within North America. So let me be, let me put that into context. While I do work with other community groups, this is my main demographic that I work with. So, and I'm assuming with some experience that, it's pretty similar in other groups as well. And when you said different socioeconomic levels, that in the economy, the way the capitalist structure in North America specifically works has a huge impact on the Muslim family. You will see many reports of how a family in the 50s and the 60s, a single parent family could own a home, for example, right? Own a comfortable home, send their children to school. And that is just no longer the case. And very often we talk about how people are just more materialistic. And while that does have a grain of truth in it, even people, very often families are struggling because they don't see an option. If you want a roof over your head, two people need to earn just because of the way the housing market is and many other reasons. So this economics obviously puts a huge challenge on families. When parents are forced to, one is, if you have a choice and you go back to work, that's a different scenario than when you desperately want to stay at home and you do not feel that you have that option, right? Secondly, societal values. And again, this is a very, very deep subject. To put it in a nutshell, we come from collectivist cultures. We come from societies where communities were taking care of each other, societies were taking care of each other. Anyone could tell our children off. I'm sure many of us have had that experience that when you went out, you were fair game. If you didn't behave yourself, any aunt or uncle could kind of support the parenting values that were being
The
taught at home.
fear of my mom being told that I was misbehaving was always in the back of my mind.
Absolutely, absolutely. And what has changed now is that we are living in a culture which is completely individualistic, right? And that has many, many repercussions. So, for one thing, people today, young people believe that they need to find their own path. They question everything, and nothing is taken as sacred. Now, I do not mean to suggest that all of this is bad. No, there were many things that needed to be questioned, and there were many things that needed to be re-examined. And, when you go back to faith and to things that we hold sacred, things that we hold that kind of guide us through life, we cannot take that as granted that the young people today would follow the same kind of deference to rules that we believe are eternal. Okay. And of course, the idea of personal happiness, that I need to feel good. I need to be okay with my choices, right? Again, it goes back to the idea of the individual above the collective. And, when you look into it, it's not if society was doing really well, if people were happy, if people were successful, I would say go for it, right? It sounds like you're on to something. reality is distress, depression, mental, you know, distress is at an all-time high. So clearly, we are at a place where we are adopting ideas and lifestyles and beliefs that are, in essence, not working for us.
Right. But I think sometimes we can kind of see that sometimes, like, as time has passed, like the generation before me, the generation before that one, like when I talk to my Nanima, sometimes I think she's probably looking at all of us like, what fools, like they don't know anything at all about what they're doing. But then when you talk to a different generation, they're so headstrong. And I feel like the cultural values are so pervasive that it's like, no, of course I have to be happy. Happiness is everything. My happiness, my rights mean more than anything else. And that's what we see in politics. That's what we see in the news media. So how do we even, you know, our whole consciousness as Muslims, as Shias, is the Jamaat, the community. It's the community above everything else. So how do we kind of balance those two frameworks without letting this generation just shut down on us completely?
Yeah, that's a million-dollar question.
Yeah, sorry.
No,
softball.
So here's the thing. You know, what I'm not suggesting is that the young people are always wrong. I'm not suggesting that at all. I believe that both generations have a lot to learn from each other. And when we say that young people today are headstrong, that's how they look at us. You know, that's how they look at us, that we're headstrong, we're not open to change, we're not open to different ways. So I believe that the learning has to come from both places. And this is, again, completely new, because the way we were brought up, what did our parents have to learn from us? Nothing. You know, we were told, you know, I mean, alhamdulillah, when I say we, I really do believe I was brought up in a very enlightened home. I had a voice. I was asked opinions. People listened. And not everyone had that experience, right? So for parents or for people who are older, you know, they are not used to this. The idea that young people have something to teach us is new culturally, not Islamically, you know, but certainly. You know, when we look at Muslim history, it was the young people who adopted the faith. And but somehow our culture has kind of, over the last few years, shut down that idea. And now we are being invited to learn again. So I think opening up the dialogue, listening to them, and, you know, both places again. You know, one of the challenges that Muslim families face today is this idea that technology has changed everything. And I won't even go into the addiction, the attention, all of that, right? But one of the ways that technology has completely flipped the parenting relationship around is that you and I learned cooking from where? Where
From
did
our
you?
parents, from our mother.
Yeah.
In the kitchen.
And where do kids learn it today?
YouTube.
YouTube,
TikTok.
Instagram, right? TikTok.
Instagram.
So naturally, parents were respected, the older generations were respected because they had something. They were seen as reservoirs of experience, wisdom, knowledge. With Google, all of that has changed. So our children don't need us for knowledge anymore. I do believe they need us for wisdom and experience, right? But, you know, unless that relationship is very strong, they can find out everything that they need to for life to function on a surface level, I would say,
right,
you know, from Google. So, you know, that's one of the ways that the relationship has completely changed.
And that relation, that bond that you talk about, I feel like I grew up in Dubai. I'm part of that kind of sandwich generation. Like, I worry about my parents as they age, but I'm also worried about my teenager, my 13-year-old, as she's getting older. So I kind of see both sides. And I know growing up in Dubai, it felt like, every Thursday night you recite Bakumail. That's what we do. And it was in the house. And this is kind of how things are. And I feel like it's harder almost now. Like, I don't know. Everyone's got such busy lives and just getting that unit. But I think those are the things that forged that bond of my family. When I look back on it, like, at the time I was like, oh my gosh, like, I have other things to do, but you had to do it. And that bond that you talk about, I feel like sometimes, do you think that it's getting stronger? It's getting harder between the parents and the kids?
Absolutely, I would say it's getting harder, right?
Yeah.
And again, many reasons for that. When you mentioned that when you were growing up, chances are you weren't given the choice. You had
I
to show
wouldn't dare
up.
ask for the choice even.
Right. So you showed up. In your home, there was a very clear hierarchy. Parents were in charge, and children were meant to obey. There was no kind of discussion, debate about this. Okay. Today, parents don't have that. And what is happening is that, so what I'm not saying is that that was a completely healthy way of doing things, right?
Of course, yeah.
That generation, generations above them, were what we call authoritarian parents. It's my way. Your job just to obey, not interested in your thoughts, feelings, you just do what I do. Okay. And of
Right.
course, a relationship like that is rife for, abuse and conflict. Okay. But there
Yeah.
was no conflict because there was a very clear hierarchy, right? And what I'm finding with parents right now is that the pendulum has swung completely the other way. So if you ask parents today, what do you want to be as a parent? They would say, I want to be friends with my child. I want my child to be happy. I want my
Yes.
child to know that they're special. I want to protect my child from every possible risk, every possible
Yeah.
challenge from life. Okay.
Every heartache.
Every heartache. And so the pendulum has swung from, being very authoritarian to being very permissive.
Okay.
Again, I would say look at the results. If it's working for you, if your kids are well adjusted, successful, able to be independent at the age of 21, that's kind of the criteria. Able to look after
Yeah.
themselves, able to contribute to society, able
Yeah.
to manage themselves and then help others. Okay. I would say go for it. Right. Actually,
Yeah.
that has not happened. Children today, when I say children, I mean young adults, are more anxious, more scared, less able to take risks. And I'm now talking what research is showing, right? This is not my opinion. And people who are hiring this generation will tell you the same thing. People who are marrying this generation will tell you the same thing. People
Yeah.
are, it's not like they lack competence. No, it's not like they lack self-awareness. They have all of those things. And we are so micromanaging their lives. We are
Yeah.
hovering and prodding and
Yeah.
overprotective. I was
Yeah.
having a conversation with someone the other day, and she was like, I was saying something about going out to play outside in the neighborhood, and she was a bit horrified. She said, we never do that. I'm like, why? She said, you have no idea the kinds of things that happen. Things today are not very safe, and anything can happen. And we didn't continue the conversation, but reality is, if you look at the stats, children are more safe today than at ever before. The fact that we are concerned about that safety is not grounded in fact. It is grounded in fear. So we
Yeah.
parent completely based on fear. fear of what might go wrong. And of course, 24/7 news feeds this fear. It feeds this anxiety, right? So overprotected, oversheltered, not really making decisions from their own, really special. My child, like when you...
Everyone's special.
Yeah, people will likely unfriend me on Facebook after hearing this. But, you know, when you share things about your child, which leads, you know, which you're sharing, that how they are the most precious thing that ever happened to humanity.
Yes.
You know, how are they going to make a relationship with an imperfect human being?
That is a bound for failure if each person goes into a friendship or relationship, each person thinking, and yeah, I think friendship as well, each person thinking, I'm so special, I'm amazing. Like,
yeah, so I call it the prince and princess syndrome, right? And I see this in my office all the time. You know, two people who have had their every need catered to, suddenly, you know, experiencing very normal marital conflict, right? But their parents have protected them from every single conflict up to now. You know, we go to school to fight with the teacher if the child doesn't do well. You know, in my day, like I got into trouble, my parents would say, good job, right? Do better. Like if you don't like the teacher, tough, deal with it, right?
Yeah.
Today we will go to incidents to change schools, to change teachers, to go and fight for that 5%, right? And so we're really well-meaning. You know, this is the one thing to recognize, that parents are doing this because they believe that they are doing their children good. And it's not.
Yeah.
You know, I have a saying which I read many years ago, which really guided me, is that, you know, when if there's a problem and here's your child, if you come in between the problem and the child to try and save the child, you actually become the problem. You become the problem.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So our job as parents, if we could see it as, rather than protecting, saving children all the time, if we equip them with the tools and the resilience and the coping skills to deal with life, because we're not going to be around all the time. You know, we need to raise grown-ups who can function in life and contribute to the world.
Yeah.
And in order to do that, it's much harder. It is so much easier to protect, 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 you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I know you kind of touched on this, but what are the issues that you see that are facing kind of the youth? And when I say youth, I mean, you know, the kids under 12 and then the teens and then college age. And then, like you said, those younger ones that are getting married and are newly married or looking for a spouse even.
Yeah, so let me answer it generally first. You know, of course, again, there's a lot, but just to, you know, put it in, like there are kind of what I see two broad groups, and I'm really generalizing, right? With apologies to all youth, like I'm really generalizing. There are two groups, one who go with the flow, who try to fit in, who have bought into this whole, into the whole culture, the society, and the pressures they face of materialism, of image consciousness. Image consciousness is probably one of the biggest challenges facing youth today. And this is across the board, you know, whether it is a young child trying to fit in at nursery school and they look different, their practices at home might be different, to the young, to a teenage girl, for example, who is seeing on Instagram how everyone looks beautiful and thin, and how every kind of algorithm is geared to get her attention so that she is not happy with who she is. You know, we have to understand that when we are on social media, and the children have to understand this, that we are the product. You know, our attention, the giants, the billions of dollars are being spent on shaping our consciousness, right? So what we do at home is simply not enough, because when we are unsupervised in the virtual world, there are many things we don't even recognize what's happening, right? So that's one group. And then, you know, we have very broadly, and again, I know with my own children, I'd probably get into trouble for saying this, but we have the woke culture, right? Youth who are conscious, who are thinking, who are actually not, who've rejected this whole idea, who've rejected everything, actually. That's one of the problems, is that they have rejected capitalism. Makes sense.
Yeah.
They have rejected, you know, a lot of values which we felt we held very dear. They have rejected faith as we practice it. Not, you know, and I really want to stress this. When we see people, young people questioning faith, we think they have no faith. That is not true. For the most part, they are deeply, they have a lot of faith. They are rejecting the idea of religion as they see it being practiced. You know, things that are not sitting well with them, okay? One of the biggest issues, and I think this drives a lot of their thinking, I know with young people that I speak to all the time, is this idea of the coming apocalypse, the idea of impending doom, the idea of the climate crisis. You know, when we were growing up, when we were young people, I'm talking about myself, our aim was, let's save up for the kids. You know, we can cut corners. We want to leave children in a place where they will be comfortable, quote unquote, right? And you see young people not interested in those things anymore. You know, so many young people I speak to, first of all, the way the economy works and the way inflation is, they can't even, like, I don't understand how young people in Canada can buy a house today. I just, like, I'm stunned, you know, unless
I believe it's pretty minimal, like the amount of people that there's a decline rather than an incline of what you would think, like, economically to the next generation should be getting better, but rather it's actually less percentage, less people can actually afford to buy a home now.
So it's because, you know, the inequalities in wealth have gotten so much bigger. It's not that there's not more money. There is way more money, right? But it's much
just going to a certain group.
So it's much more concentrated. So for them, you know, the world that they're inheriting is a source of great stress for them. You know, the climate, like we, you know, we may talk about it and we may recycle. For them, this is, when I'm 50, like, what is the world going to be like? Is it going to be inhabitable? Like, these are real questions on the youth's minds. So what I'm saying is that, and in addition to that, their lives are so polarized. You know, what they experience in, quote unquote, the real world, and how life is lived. And there is a huge disconnect between the home and the outside. And so because of that, it's, you know, and I do believe that parenting, you know, good parenting has a lot of impact, the relationship, you know, work on the relationship, all of that. And we need to realize what we are up against. You know, a large part of their waking hours are not at home. And what they are facing in the real world may be actually exactly opposite than what we are trying to, you know, the kind of values that we're trying to teach them.
Yeah. So what advice would you give, if you could give one piece of advice to parents to create that bond with that child, since there's such a, you know, significant difference in what the kids are facing, whether it's when they're on their devices and then they're at school. And then how much time do, you know, parents actually have with their kids when you factor in those two things? It seems like we're kind of at the short end of the stick in terms of how much influence we could have.
Yes, you know, I try not to think of it like that because it can be
Yeah.
very eating and feel
I am doom and gloom, yes.
right. So, and I tend to be I call myself a psychotic optimist. So I do believe that whatever the challenges, we also have more resources today. You know, this is something that is not talked about so often. When you and I were growing up, and I realize there's a large age difference, but you know, still part of, you know, maybe just one generation apart. But there were no podcasts like this. There were no parenting programs, you know. There was no mental health awareness. Books weren't written about this subject. And now
Yeah.
we have a lot of information. You know, relationship today, parenting today is actually a science. Parenting is one of the most researched fields in the field of social science. So we
Wow.
have actually really good evidence of what does work. And that's the good news that parents really need to remember. We have support, we have all kinds of support, whether it is reading, whether it is a course, whether it is you know, consulting with somebody one-on-one, whether it is joining a parent group. So there's a lot we can do. In terms of building a relationship with our children, you know, we as parents have, I like to think of it as that we have a parenting toolkit, and the parents' default tool is lecturing. That's the tool
Yeah.
that we pick up, you know. Lecturing, lecturing, lecturing. Okay. And obviously, when we do that, we are training the children to do what?
Just zone out.
To zone out, to switch off. So, in order to build a bond with anyone, whether it's a child, a spouse, our in-laws, siblings, we have to be able to talk. And when I say talk, I don't mean just talk, but listen, communicate. Okay.
Right.
And in order to build a bond with our kids, we need to listen far more than we talk. It's very challenging, trust me. Okay.
Yeah.
We need to listen and we need to be curious. So when we listen to our kids, I know I do that. If it is something that we disagree with, it's our judgment hat that goes on. You know, while they're speaking, we are formulating our response. We are ready to tell them why they're wrong and we're right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, one of my pastimes is that when you know, when you look at two people arguing, whether you're part of the conversation or when you see two people discussing, just notice it's usually when they disagree about something, it's two people talking parallel to each other. You know, one person will say exactly what they feel and how they think is right, what they think is right, and the other person will do exactly the same thing. And none of them leave with any degree of further understanding of the other person, expanding their thinking, or any of that. All they leave with is more of the same, right? In
Yeah.
order to build a bond with our kids, we need to understand them. We need to understand how they're thinking, what they're worried about, what their hopes and dreams are. And believe me, I get that this is very challenging. It's very easy for me to sit here and do, but when I'm having difficult conversations with my children, it's just as hard for me to do this because we have to, you know, when we put down that idea of judgment and we try on the glasses of curiosity. You know, oh, this is how you think. So tell me more. Help me understand. You know, one of my favorite, I always suggest that parents learn a few, you know, phrases to
Yeah.
help get through difficult conversations. And one of them is help me understand. You know, help me understand why this is
Yeah.
happening to you. What is it? And when we do that, first of all, you know, when people are used to being lectured at or just told more of the same, you know, before we've opened our mouth, we know exactly, they know exactly what we're going to say.
Yeah.
So the good news is that we've actually done our job. Like, in the sense, we are predictable. They know where we stand, right? When my son was young, he used to say that, Mama, I don't know what you've done to me, but if I even want to do something wrong, I have your voice in my head, telling me. I'm like, oh, great. Right? But
You're like success.
that only works for if used very discretionately, right? In small doses. If that's our only tool in our parenting toolbox, then that's where we get into trouble, So I would say, listen, listen, listen. Don't assume that you know what your children think and believe. Don't assume that they believe what we do. This is one of the most kind of challenging and heartbreaking parts of the work I do, is when parents come face to face with children who challenge their most deeply held beliefs. And, this happens suddenly because we all assume, and this is what keeps us going, by the way, that we're all on the same page. We agree with the basics, right? And, lastly, I would say also don't always assume that they're always wrong. When they challenge us, and so many kids, like, and this is, by the way, what we are seeing more and more in the political context today. I have immense hope for the New World Order. And it is certainly not because of my generation, right? When you see protests, when you see people really standing up and calling into account the people in power, it is the young people. You've seen it at universities. The admin is really, very oppressive, and it's the young people today. We read people taking over college campuses. So they, this is what we should be proud of. These are our kids. This is this generation. And while we spend so much time dissing, in Urdu we have a phrase, aajkal ke bacche. So children today, right? And that's not a helpful way of dealing with this generation. It's just not, because it puts us against you and them, right? You and us. So it already creates a divide, right? And if we build those bridges of understanding, bridges of learning from them, then it doesn't have to be this way. We can still disagree, by the way, and we will. We will. But at least we have maintained the relationship, and at least we have gotten a little bit further in our understanding of each other.
That's a really hopeful way of kind of looking at everything. And when you speak to kind of how parents should change their way of thinking, or just kind of maybe take a second look at it, it makes me think that part of parenting is also doing self-work. I was lucky enough to be part of your program that we had. I think it's now 3, 4 years, but I considered it fundamentally life-changing because it completely changed the way I was thinking. Like the way I innately went to my thoughts, it was very reaction-based. And now it's like there's much more of a pause before, just that thought process, just taking a step back. Can you kind of speak a little bit to the self-work that's needed sometimes in order to, one, help the relationship, two, help yourself, and third, help your children grow up to be, like you said, amazing contributing members of society that aren't self-absorbed as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, thank you for that validation. It's always, that's the kind of feedback that keeps me going, that it's actually helping people. In terms of, one of my kind of overarching reminders to myself and to parents is that becoming a parent is a divine invitation for self-growth. If you've been in my courses, you've probably heard that, right? And, that means It's so easy. It is just so easy to always focus on other people, on how they're wrong, on how society's wrong, on, and the thing is, if we think like that, it's not like we're wrong. There are a lot of challenges. So whether it is a teenager who is misbehaving with you, right, quote unquote misbehaving, or somebody who's back talking, a child who is making different choices, a spouse who is grumpy, right? Whatever the situation might be. The issue is the more we focus on them, we are completely giving away our power. We have no power to change them. They are not in our control. And the more we focus on that, the less at cause we feel in our own lives. The more discouraged we feel, the more it's a very hopeless place to be, right?
It's
That's why.
becoming the victim, I think, when I was in your class.
So when you actually look at everything in your life, whether it is a child, a parent, a sibling, a spouse, and think of them as a circumstance in your life. Right? Circumstance means something that is beyond your control, beyond your direct control. And then see what can I do in given these situations, what are my options? And very often we tell ourselves, oh, I have no options. My child screamed at me. Obviously, I screamed. What other choice did I have? Actually, we always have choices. And given any situation, it may be not great choices, like two choices, both of which I don't like, and that's still a choice, right? There is still a choice to be made. When I begin to think like that, consider my options. What is going to help me further along my goal? So let's take a challenging teenager, okay? They are talking back, they are not listening to anything I say. They are on their phones all the time. Okay. Very common situation in many households. Now, I could spend, and I would be right, talking about children today and technology today and how, everything is wrong. Or I could look at the situation and see what are my options, right? And if one of my options, for example, is to yell, to scream. Not that I've ever done that, right? But if that is one of my options, first of all, I have to see that that was a choice I made, number one. And number two, ask myself, did that help me further along my goal? Did it take me towards my goal or did it take me away from my goal? That's a simple, simple way to kind of test yourself. And if we are doing things on a regular basis, which are taking us away from our goal, we need to take that pause and see what else could I do? What else can I do? And that's this moment to moment choice is honoring the free will that Allah has given us. Doesn't matter how difficult the circumstance, we may have very limited agency in situations, especially in situations of abuse or things that can be very challenging, especially for women, especially for even some youth. And even in situations like that, I have to sit down and I have to ask myself, what are my options?
Could you, one part I think of our communities is the rise of single parent households. Could you talk about that aspect and any advice you could give to those in that situation?
Absolutely. So, yes, this is a rising and growing phenomenon. And we won't discuss why this is so, just because that would take us the whole a long time. Let's talk a little bit about how they can thrive. The idea is that parenting is hard work, even with two parents. And if you are doing it alone, kudos. Kudos to you. Okay. A few things to perhaps reflect on. First of all, to the best of your ability, and this is probably the hardest of everything I'm going to suggest, facilitate and maintain access to the other parent for your children. especially mothers, we tend to be gatekeepers for our children, you know, whether it is to in-laws, whether it is to our families, whether it is to an ex-spouse. And, you know, in a situation like this, we really need to work on ourselves to put our own feelings aside and to remember, and there's a lot of good research on this, right? That whatever their parent is like, obviously you don't like them, otherwise you would still be together. You know, clearly they have issues, okay? And unless, you know, except in the most extreme and abusive of situations, children will generally benefit with regular contact with the other parent. So it's a big, huge act of love for you to facilitate and maintain that for them. And if things work out really well, you know, you can have a good co-parenting relationship. You know, there are many situations where an ex-spouse kind of steps up and, you know, changes. So change is always possible. And you will find I work with so many parents who have an amazing co-parenting relationship, even, you know, that they recognize that they themselves won't get along, right? Find a support system for yourself. First of all, your own support. You know, mothers in particular tend to be so highly critical of themselves. And once again, I would say, if it's making you a better human being, if it's making you happy, go for it. But likelihood it's not, because the energy that you need in order to parent, in order to be there for your children, in order to give them the skills, you are using on self-criticism and in being at war with yourself. So, you know, a foundation of being kind to yourself, of self-compassion, being a support for yourself, being a friend. I call it being a friend to yourself. And then, of course, surround yourself with support for yourself, whether it is with siblings, parents, and if nothing, parenting groups, friends. You know, one of the issues with the individualistic society is that we are very hesitant to ask for help. We think we can do it all, and we feel we will be imposing on people. And when we feel like that, I remind people to ask them how they feel when they are invited to be of service to another human being. And chances are that we feel good. You know, everyone feels valued when we can contribute to somebody else's well-being. And when we ask for help, we are allowing somebody to be that for us. So we don't need to go for, you know, human beings were not meant to parent in isolation, you know. We always lived in communities, we had the support, and now we want to do it all on our own. And no wonder we're stressed out. Okay. And, you know, lastly, be open to talking about the experience of a single parent household with your children. Again, don't assume that you know what their experience and challenges are. And of course, this is hard because you're going through stuff yourself. And when you are going through challenging times, it's really challenging to show up for other people. And yet, as a parent, that's what we need to do. So get all the support you can. You know, no one ever got a medal for doing it all by yourself. You know, at the end of it, it doesn't matter how you did it. If you come out in one piece, happy. And by the way, one of the biggest boons or one of the biggest deposits in a children's well-being is a parent who is happy, especially mother's well-being has a great impact on children. So you will be, you know, when mothers look after themselves, when societies look after mothers, you know, when we as communities look after mothers, we are really investing enough in the future of our children.
Yeah, one thing that you touched on that made me think about this is that, you know, we're always trying to, like, if you are becoming a better person, if you are helping out someone else, if you are becoming a better parent. And one thing I've seen in the non-Shia, non-Muslim world, and I have a good friend who became a step parent to two other kids, got married, and, you know, their point of view was, if I can love more children and provide this house to these kids, why wouldn't I? And loves them with every fiber of their being. And that's something I wish I could see more of in our community. Because with the rise of single parenting, I think if you talk to single parents, they don't want to remain single. I think it's nice when parents can get together for a second marriage. But that idea, that concept of it might not be my blood child, but how amazing is it that I get to provide love to this human being, this creation of Allah? And that line of thinking sometimes is somewhat missing a little bit.
We are seeing more of it, as simply due to the fact that divorce is on the rise, and people are getting divorced and they are parents. Just by a numbers game, you are seeing more blended families. And while blended families, yes, do they bring their own sets of challenges? Absolutely. And I personally am seeing a lot of very good models of blended families, really good models. Not doesn't mean that they don't have challenges, it doesn't mean it's perfect, but they are doing all the right things. So again, there's hope.
Stay hopeful. Our last question for you. How do you think parents can build confidence with all these ch challenges today, with all these dynamics, with so many things changing, like week to week, I feel like things are changing. How do we keep up the strength and build our confidence in order to raise kids who are confident as well?
Yes, absolutely. So I think, first of all, to point out that parents are not that confident today. In the past, they wouldn't question themselves, right? And today, even though they're trying much, much harder, they also have much, much less confidence, more self-criticism, right? So I always say, focus on the process, focus on the process. I'm sure you've heard me say this, right? Focusing on the process means keep learning, do the next right thing, and then keep doing the next right thing and leave the outcome up to Allah, because the outcome is never, ever in our hands. And we have such, spiritual stories from the Quran, from role models, that a parent can do everything in their power and children will still choose a path which is theirs, and it's their responsibility, right? So, one of the things that in my parenting programs I talk about is what are we actually responsible for? And parents today have this idea, and I may get a lot of flack for saying this, we have this idea that parents are responsible for how their children turn out. The first thing we do when we see somebody who is quote unquote not meeting our criteria, we say, look at the parents, look at the mother, look at the father, right? And often it's not that simple. Parents are not responsible for how their children turn out. They are responsible for guiding them, absolutely, for building a relationship with them, absolutely, for being a good role model, absolutely, for correcting them, for providing them with resources. All of this we are responsible for, but we are not responsible for how our children turn out. That is an outcome which is never in our hands. And that is something hard to accept and also very empowering, because focusing on the process we can all do. We can look at good parenting practices, we can learn them, we can keep trying, right? So it's also very freeing to know that. And there is good spiritual literature that tells us that if we've done our best, if we followed what I call the Islamic parenting contract, 0 to 7, 7 to 14, 14 to 21, if we've done those stages, then we have done our duty by God. And lastly, I would say, trust your instinct. There is so much parenting advice on social media today. Some of it good, a lot of it
Yeah.
scary.
It is overwhelming.
Overwhelming, absolutely. And, without, so I call it, that's why I never talk about things as tips or techniques. I will only teach tools and practices, because a practice is something you do again and again and again. It's not a hack. Sadly, parenting, there's just no quick way to do it. And in a society where everything is a hack,
Yeah.
there's no parenting hack. Like, it takes time and effort and intentionality, right?
Yeah.
So learning is a very good idea, but also, we are a faith of balance. And in today's society, everything is off balance. People are really permissive, really, step over the line between a parent and a friend, all of those things, right? And the past thing of authoritarian parenting also did not work. People say we turned out okay. No, most of us are in therapy, right? So there are things.
Those who aren't really need to be because they're affecting the ones who have to go.
So my favorite saying is, most of my clients come for therapy because people in their lives who need therapy won't go. Right?
Yes.
So that model didn't work. And the friend, the being overprotective, being a friend, hovering, that's not working either. We need some sort of balance, right? And the balance we will find in our faith, in getting back to sensible practices, have, again, looking to our role models. The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam had an amazing relationship with youth, had an amazing relationship with children. So we need to nurture the relationship, but we also, our parents, we need to be in charge. Children feel safe when they are protected and somebody is in charge. When there is no boundaries, when they don't know where the boundaries are, it's an unsafe place for children to be. So we need to get back, in charge of our families, trust our instincts, trust our instincts that we know our kids, we have faith, we have, quite a good idea of what needs to be done. And let's not get confused with all the noise out there.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Sister Marzia, for your time today. It is so appreciated. I know so many people have found help and advice in this. Those who are looking to find you, where can they reach out to you, or do you have a social that they could follow?
So yes, I'm quite easy to find. Social is always at Marzia Hassan, Facebook and Instagram. I don't do TikTok. And website, I have www.marziahassan.com, marziahassan.org. So either of those, and lots of free resources. I'm sure I've written 1,000 blogs plus on stuff like this. So YouTube channel, like, I have, easy to find, not hard.
Yes. And I will like to plug your books as I do have them, and I have reached out to them as a source of comfort to myself. So for those who want more of just a book format, those are available as well. Join us again next month. Thank you so much to our listeners for joining us on Sukoon, a Muslim wellness podcast by Nisimco. You can find our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or on our website, nisimco.org. You can also listen in to the Nisimco radio available on our website, nisimco.org, and the Nisimco app available on Google Play Store and the Apple App Store. Nisimco Radio brings you the latest news, insightful discussions, and spiritual guidance from prominent scholars. Tune in for enriching content that brings communities together. Your contributions will enable us to maintain the quality and reach of Nisimco Radio and the Sukoon podcast. Your support will empower us to continue fostering unity, knowledge, and spiritual growth within our community. To keep this vital work going, please consider donating under General Fund on nisimco.org. Until next time, Salaam Alaikum.